You are listening to episode 264 of the podcast of Ice and Fire, the longest podcast dedicated to George R. R. Martin's Song of Ice and Fire series. As usual,
this is Ashley.
And this is Amin. And it's good to be back after a while, Ashley. Good to
hear you. Took a long break there.
Yeah, I mean, it's been busy, but I guess what we'll talk about today a little bit before we get into the chapters is some convention talk and some general news about House of the Dragon. But so I guess we can start about Ice and Fire Con 2022, since that recently happened. If you can just let us know like how it went. And
yeah, so since COVID, it has been postponed 2 years in a row. And so everything was just kind of like, a lot of people were like, we don't know what's happening. Is it happening? And is it not happening? Do we have to switch dates again? And so everything was, you know, pushback. Don't know, are we going to get the same guests? Are the same people going to show up? Like, it was very much going into it this year, at least for me, it was very high strung. A lot of last minute stuff, trying to figure things out. But it went off great. It happened last weekend in April. We had amazing weather. Anyone who's gone knows that weather is usually shit. Pardon me for saying, but it's usually raining or breezy or overcast. But the weather was gorgeous out the entire weekend. And it was the first year we've sold out 350 tickets.
Wow.
So, I mean, like, I was worried that COVID would hit our numbers hard, and it didn't. We were selling right up until the last minute, selling tickets to it. So, I mean, it was a huge success, I guess you could say. I was very, very much surprised. And, there was another musical this year. This year they did Queens, a parody of Six, the musical of the Six Wives of Henry VIII. That should be on YouTube soon. I know they're working on it to get the sound right and everything. So that'll go up. So definitely keep an eye out for that when that comes out, because it was hilarious.
With the if it's available with the episode by the time it comes out, we'll post that. If not, we'll share that on our Twitter and Facebook and all that when it comes out for sure.
Yep. And it had oh goodness, I feel like I need to like pull up the page. I don't want to leave anybody out.
Yeah, open up, take a look at the schedule, and also tell us about. How was the contingent? Did we have Vassals of Kings? Were we have people there, like listeners there? Did we have a good group of people?
There were some of the regulars. I mean, you know the group better than I do. I feel bad because I'm always just running around like crazy. This was like the first year. I didn't get to really go to panels this year because there were some events I had to take over, and then there was events that I was already planning on running. So it just... like I didn't get to go to programming. It really sucked in that regard. Anyways,
you're one of the people running the convention, basically, right? You're helping.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. You're very busy running to. After it's over, you can kind of take a breath and be like, okay, it's done. Well, let's take a look. Maybe actually, I'm curious to look at. I assume there probably was the board game playing or tournament or gaming nights, that kind of stuff.
Yep. John did the board game again this year.
Nice.
They had their own private room so that no one could knock over pieces this time. So, yeah, our guest of honor this year, we actually had a guest of honor, was David J. Peterson, who does the language for the shows.
Right.
He does the Dothraki and the High Valyrian, and he had a number of panels talking about that. I think he had one just about him in general, one about the show specifically, and one more about High Valyrian specifically, I think, was the three. And I did manage to sneak into those three. Like, I might have been late for them, but I wanted to make sure that I at least got to those ones.
Well, we've actually interviewed him on the podcast before.
Yeah.
It was really a lot of fun. I'm just trying to see which episode it was, but it was a good one.
It was early. I mean, me being as shy as I was, I didn't even, like, mention that to him. I'm just like, I probably doesn't remember.
That was after we met him. Originally, we met him at Comic-Con, the first Comic-Con we went to, because he was doing some kind of a panel there.
Yeah, I remember Mimi saying that she got like a book.
Oh, yeah, we did. We had the How to Learn Valyrian or a Dothraki book. It was a Dothraki lesson there. So, I mean, he's a good guy. I'm not surprised that he became and was popular. Like,
I don't, He seemed to enjoy it during the costume parade, which we don't have a contest, but we do have, you know, everyone shows their costumes and people can do a performance part. One lady did Daenerys, and she performed the speech in High Valyrian, that big one that she does.
Hmm.
And, like, spoke Valyrian, like, amazingly, and, like, he came out from backstage just to watch. So it was really impressive.
Episode 156. I think that's the one where we interviewed him. So right after Comic-Con, actually. So that's good. Mm-hmm. 350 people, that's a good amount of people. Like that's a medium-sized con now. But that location, I guess, can handle it. They have like the hotels or the place that like, actually can fit those amount of people. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, I booked my room super late. We did not get a room that we wanted. We had to get something larger than normal and had to pay extra for that. But I mean, the fact that we were still able to get a room that late, I think that's a good sign for how much room space they have. Because we can't go larger than 350.
Mm. Well, that is tempting for me now to come back one day. But I mean, I was there so many years in a row. I saw the convention grow, and it's probably the best place it's ever been now.
Yeah, I mean, like this coming year would be the year. It's the 10-year anniversary next year. Mm. So we're trying to do something special for that. We had the wolves there again. If you wanted to take photos with the wolves. Oh, that's
right. Remember the wolves? Yeah.
There's, you know, the trivia and the Quiblash done by Ashea from History of Westeros. She always puts that on.
Right.
We had our dance party this year was A Dream of Spring. We decided on that theme 2 years ago, and it was never more apt. <You know? laughs> The Manimals were there again this year. They were there 1 year, a couple years ago when we were still in Virginia. I think it was almost 5 years ago now. Yeah, so this was their first time back, and they're a band that plays original Song of Ice and Fire music, and they're amazing. They're incredible live. So definitely check that out. I'm sure you can find them online.
I think the Vassals often do their own podcast as well, Vassals of Kingsgrave. So it'll be interesting to see their recap of the experience from their point of view, because you get the different points of view. Generally for conventions, was this the first convention you'd been to in a while, or have you kind of gone to any other conventions?
Yep. This is the first thing I've been to since well before COVID. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I guess TeslaCon was probably the last one, which would have been, that's a steampunk convention I go to, and that's in the fall. So it would have been the fall of 2019 was the last thing I've been to, really. We were checking people's vaccination cards or proof of negative test for it. That we made that a policy a few months beforehand. So
that seems to be the standard now. I mean, I guess we can move on to, because I want to talk about Comic-Con 2022. Like they're doing the same thing. You either have to have your vaccination proof or negative test. That's part of their policy. I mean, you were at Comic-Con 2019, right? Yeah, you were in 2019. So that was the last time it was in person, and it's in person now. And I'm planning to go. I'm going as press. Already, but I applied for various panels, podcasting, which we actually did last year online for them. So I'm hoping there's a good chance to do that. House of the Dragon / Game of Thrones.
You're gonna have to learn all about that show then. All
right. Well, if it's approved, then I will learn it. But I mean, the show won't be out, so there's only so much you can learn. I mean, that's, you and I were talking about that before we recorded. Like the approach, except for that panel, our approach is let's just go in and enjoy it without doing so much analysis beforehand, like not knowing all the details, I think is the way to go. But I think one of the key points is I'm not so attached to the past history. I think that's important. Like, they change things or whatever. I don't care. I just want to see, is this a good show or not? I don't have that sense of attachment to the material.
Right. Because it's more, the story is less of a character story. Like, it's not as personal with the characters. So you're not as, you know, really set in how they act, I guess.
I just want to see, can they make a good show or not? If they make a good show and I enjoy it, and I want that after like 2 years of the pandemic, I want that experience of watching the show with friends again and, you know, having like a party or dinner. That's more important to me and just enjoying the show. I don't feel like, oh, they changed this or it could be better. Just see if it's good or not. If it's good, I'll enjoy it. Like the Game of Thrones itself is done, so we can just enjoy this content as something separate. Orville is coming out this summer, and June is the release date, which is, I also applied for an Orville fan panel, so want to do that. But I'm looking forward to it. And we talked about, like, you talked about hotels for Ice and FireCon. Like, I went through the whole hotel apocalypse thing for Comic-Con, which is crazy. I didn't get a room, but then I got a room via this group, like with the Friends of Comic-Con. They really saved me, so I have a room now.
Oh, that's good.
That's
part of the reason why I'm always like hesitant, like for Comic-Con, is like they wait so long to tell you if you're approved or not that you don't know if you need to get a room or not. You don't know if you need to book tickets, and like the further you wait, the more expensive tickets are going to be, like flights.
Right. And you're far away too. The further you are, the more expensive it's from Canada, Eastern Canada, to get there. It's just crazy. But I'm glad that you did come those couple of years and get that experience. And
yeah, I think it's going to be an every couple of years thing for me. Like, it's not an every year, but every few years I'd like to go see how it is.
Well, I'll be keeping our flag going and our contact going. So in the future, this should be easier just to keep renewing or getting whatever press or panel route in there. But if there's anyone who is listening who is in San Diego or is interested in attending, it is possible we might have extra badges available depending on how things go. Or even if we don't have badges, like at least we can have a meetup I might organize. So let us know if you're attending or interested in attending. Who knows what the options are? Because sometimes you end up with extra badges, or at least there's lots of events that go on outside of this, like in the city, but not in the convention. Mm-hmm. It's just the whole city gets full of people.
Yeah, that is one of the nice things, is that that one strip is just like, it's just Comic-Con, the entire street.
Mm. That's about it, I guess, for convention and news. I mean, we said House of the Dragon is coming this summer. We'll watch it and potentially review it. I think we'll see how that goes. But otherwise, we just hope to get back to our reread and get more hosts here when we can. Kyle's been pretty busy with work, and Mimi with school and work. So
yeah, yeah. Apologies to everyone for our long hiatus, but I mean, there was no book and no show at the time, so
right,
felt entitled to it.
Okay, well, I guess we'll go into our ongoing reread of Feast for Dragons, and how we call it, the combination Feast for Crows and Dance with Dragons. Although today it's really just Feast for Crows, just two chapters from there. So yep. Doesn't make much difference. The first chapter is Cersei 2, and I'll talk briefly about it, but I prefer more of the just go through the chapter approach. But as an overview, it's really just the continued aftermath of Tywin's death and how Cersei is handling it and her slow descent into madness from it, essentially, and her conflict with the various people there. That's really the chapter in a nutshell, but I guess we can go into the specifics. And one of the key parts early in the chapter is just she thinks about how, like, there's not a lot of mourners there for Tywin. Like, Tommen's like, where's everybody? This on the outside, and she thinks, well, like, Tywin didn't think much about being loved. Well, obviously he wouldn't be loved in King's Landing specifically, given
the sacking
there.
Of King's Landing, yeah.
Right, no one's going to love him there. But even just generally, it shows Tywin doesn't really value being loved, and fair enough to a degree, but I think part of one of the themes of Feast for Crows in particular is both Tywin and Ned are dead now, and let's look at their legacies. And I think in legacies, the fact that Ned was loved actually helped him more. Like, there's people actually willing to die for him and his daughter now, later on, but nobody really cares about Tywin anymore. So there's an argument there the other way, but I think that was interesting.
I like Tycel's line about having served six kings, but Tywin was the only one worthy.
Right. He's the founding member of the Tywin fan club. You almost feel sorry for him in this chapter a little bit, right?
Well, no, I still remember he's a horrible old man.
Yes.
But it makes, like, Tywin is a horrible person, but I also think that he could have done a good job as king, even though he's a horrible father.
Right.
Like,
well, he doesn't fit into a complete box. Like, you can't just easily say, like, he's total evil and, like, get rid of him. Like, he did do a lot of good. He's complicated.
I wonder if we took away his family life, if we ignored that completely, would you think of him as a good person? And I think probably.
Well, I think...
He's pretty fair.
He's like, capable. I mean, he's fair. I think also maybe some of his the way he turned out is some of his upbringing. I think the Tywin as a character, probably growing up, like he had an intellectual, like he had a genius toward like this kind of statescraft and stuff. But then he became very hard and did these certain things. But I think he always had the potential to be great, and he was great in some ways. But I mean, there's arguments the other way. Like some people say, like he sadistically enjoyed the things that he did to Tyrion and all that stuff. Like he actually enjoyed doing that, right? Like, so.
I don't think he enjoyed. I don't think he thought anything of it. Mm. I'm not sure that that's any better.
He just cannot be put in one box and just say, oh, he's totally evil and everything he did is bad. You know, he did do some great things. Even Stannis says that. Right, even like when Stannis, when he went there, he thought Tywin was the king. He's like, this guy. When he went there, when he visited court, he thought Tywin was the king. Like he must have been doing some good stuff with like the way he was dealing with like the court and stuff, right? The justice of that day. So, and Pycelle certainly likes him. Pycelle's beard has been shaved, and he looks really weak now and ugly. Right? That's mentioned. This or the next chapter.
I just remember Tywin has nothing but scorn for the small folk. So now he's not that great. Mm.
Yeah, well, he's certainly better. It was better than Aerys.
Given the kings that we can like have choose from in Pycelle's lifetime, I could do worse definitely than Tywin. The thing that else stuck out to me, other than the fact that I realized this was just Cersei's second chapter, and like this is the first time we see inside Cersei's head, and my God, because I loved her up until A Feast for Crows. Mm. I thought she was great until I found out she was batshit crazy and stupid.
Mm. Yeah, so it does change your mind when you actually see her point of view. It certainly does it. And one interesting thing, she talks about Tywin and like how his eyes could see inside you, how weak and worthless and ugly you were. I was like, whoa, is that she has some self thoughts about that or something? Like that was interesting that she brings that up. But at the same time, she also thinks very highly of her. She's a contradiction. Like she thinks like, oh, Tywin is a great man, but he'll just be known as the father of Cersei. Like Cersei is going to be great in her own in history books.
She's delusional. It reminds me of that, you know, how they say like stupid people are the less intelligent people are the ones that think that they're the smartest. Like the more intelligent you are, the more you realize how little you know. And she's, you know, the exact opposite.
Exactly. Like I know what you're saying. I mean, and also what's interesting is like just the craziness and the fact that she sees conspiracies like everywhere, like every single person. It lends credence to the idea of like, oh, she's like Aerys' daughter or whatever. Like it's just the same kind of mentality, like seeing conspiracies everywhere. Yeah. Even though it doesn't, I mean, that doesn't work. I think that's objectively ruled out, but it's just like that whole, like the burn stuff. And
Kevin gives her really good advice, you know, about who to put as hand, and she's
right.
She doesn't even think about it. Like, and he even tells her that you know, that putting them as hand will make them her man and not Tyrell's. So she would take a Bannerman from Tyrell in doing that. And she doesn't even consider that. Like,
she's thinking, like, how much gold did you take? Like, you at least listen to what he says. It's just like, his advice is very helpful there. Like, that the fact that you weaken the Tyrells by doing that. And she's just like, oh, you're a bot, aren't you? It's like, and his picks are interesting, too. Like, the fact that both interesting because get somebody respectful or somebody who can help win the war. And either way, they'll be loyal, right? Like he has a lot of sense in this chat. And Kevin basically is just like, he's done giving a shit. Like, he's not going to show any respect or whatever. He's just going to say what he wants now. And he is capable. I mean, no wonder Kevin gets killed later on, right? He was actually starting to stabilize things a little bit.
Yep.
And they couldn't tolerate that. So
he had to go. It's upset me. I really liked Kevin. I thought he was, you know, that poor guy.
Hmm.
He seemed like a genuinely a good person, one of the few in the books. So,
looking here at when Cersei meets Phallus and they're talking about Lawless's kid, and they're like, well, we want to name the kid, the bastard kid, Tywin, and she's like, no, you can't do that.
Yeah, that was a. I'm sorry, Mama Lolly, but that was a bad thought.
Yeah, it was dumb. Yeah, ultimately, I think Bronn names that kid Tyrion later on, which is funny later. I'm looking forward to seeing that. But somebody else gets to name the kid Tywin, or at least is allowed to.
Yeah, but that they were, you know, a proper noble lord people. Of noble birth and whatnot. The other thing that stood out to me was realizing that Lancel's only 17.
Yeah.
And just being grossed out, because it's like, as someone in their a woman in their 30s, the idea of a 17-year-old is just like, ah, Cersei, you can do better. That can't have been your best choice.
Right, and she messed them up badly, like Jaime as well.
Yeah.
He's just like totally messed up and also injured and all that stuff. Like,
good lord, 17. That's a baby. I'm getting old, and I see 17-year-olds as babies.
Right, I mean, it's 17 of Westeros, but still, yeah. Even looking at what other notes I had for this chapter, I mean, it was just a bunch of errors by Cersei for the most part. Lord Giles, or the guy was coughing, is going to be running the coffers, but he understands that he wants to replace Littlefinger's men, so he seems confident. He's like, he knows that it's important to put your own people in there.
Yeah. But I don't know. I don't understand why she. Well, I guess I do, because she's paranoid. But the person that Tywin had set up, like,
right. Even Tywin was willing to do. I'm assuming that he's telling the truth. I don't think he's too dumb to be lying. I think like Mace actually is telling the truth. That so even Tywin was willing to tolerate that because it was worth it for Alliance. But Cersei is not.
Yep, and Queen of Thorns got her barbs in. That's always pleasant to see.
Yeah, she's smarter than her son. She's managing her son there.
Yep.
Then there's also, so after the kind of the scene at the funeral kind of thing, or the wake, or whatever, she talks with Qyburn, which is really interesting. And
yeah, I don't know if I ever picked up on the fact that he's trying to, you know, doing magic with the venom, like suggesting that the venom had a magic part to it. I don't.
Well,
think
he's not just
really
a science guy. Like he's looking into the. I mean, he does that as well, but he's also looking.
Yeah.
He does the biology and the magic, and he wants to learn from that. And he's like on the level of Marwyn. Like they both are really interesting characters that like did not get along well with the rest of the Maesters.
Yeah, and he apparently was, you know, talking with Marwyn too when they were back at the Citadel, because
right.
He mentions Marwyn even said this or whatever.
Which is really interesting. I mean, Qyburn is actually a very interesting character. Like, in terms of like the knowledge that he has, he could be very, very influential. Like, mm-hmm. And he knows a lot too, just from being here. But I'm just talking about like his previous investigations and stuff. Is really interesting. And then even he investigates here. I'm talking about his more medical magic knowledge. But even just here, when he finds that gold coin, which is, I think Varys either probably Varys planted it as the easy answer. Like, why is there a coin there? Just to cause, like, trouble, right? Just to get their Cersei going with the whole conspiracies.
Yeah, no. The Tyrells would not bribe someone with a coin that would only be tied to the
Trace
Tyrell.
To themselves, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's either Varys put it or somebody else put it there. The easy answer, I mean, and then probably most obvious, is Varys put it, so that Cersei would see it, and then Cersei would become more paranoid. That is probably just the... I mean, Varys is Rugen. Jaime himself basically confirms it in the next chapter we get to, mm-hmm. but that was just one of Varys's like aliases, was being the jailer guy there. And they talk about like he's rarely there and he's disappeared.
That's Varys. Made me wonder. It's like, did he have something to do with Jack and Hagar?
I also thought about it as well, because he was in charge of those cells, right?
And I refuse to believe that the faceless man just got himself caught.
No, that doesn't make sense. So like, what does that mean? Was Varys working with him, and then
were they planning,
or was it part of the plan to let him go with Ned? Like, I don't know. Like, that one is interesting to think about.
Because he couldn't have predict, like he probably knew that Cersei wanted Robert dead, but he couldn't have predicted when it would happen, because Cersei wouldn't have even known if that plan with the boar would have worked.
Yeah, he also didn't think that Ned would mess things up so quickly there. Like, he thought there was a little bit more time, I think, too. Mm. Before like the critical moment came, so I don't know, like, if it seems probably he had them there for a reason, and then maybe Ned randomly took him out of jail and sent him up north, or was that also part of his plan? I don't think he was supposed to go north. I think that was the wrong direction, for him. But it seems too much of a coincidence to have Jack in there and then Varys like runs the cells. Like that seems too much.
Yeah,
of a coincidence.
I'm trying to think like who would he be there to kill if he was just in King's Landing to kill somebody in the.
Well, are we pretty sure that Jaqen is the guy that goes to the Citadel later? I think it's the same guy, isn't it?
Yeah.
So,
but I feel like
that's a change in plans, maybe, because there was no dragons at the start of.
Right, that's what I think. I think that wasn't the plan to begin with. There was something else going on. But I guess Varys does, with Illyrio, have enough money to pay for a faithless man. But
no, they have the money for it, and they have the connections. So, and just the fact that, like, he runs that level of the jails, and then this guy's there. It just doesn't make sense that it would be a coincidence. I don't know. Doesn't seem like it. Let's see here. And so they're talking to Qyburn some more. And he's allowed to work on Sir Gregor. And there's a line in here talking about Gregor being plagued by blinding headaches and drinking milk of the poppy. And I think that's kind of like a line that's drawn upon for the whole idea that Gregor has like a brain tumor or something, and that's why he's like such a monster or something.
It
feeds into that theory, but he also just could have headaches.
Yeah, well, the idea is there's something actually wrong with him to make him as horrible as he is, but he's also shown intelligence too at some points, so
it could extend. I mean, he might already be an evil guy, and the tumor makes him even worse. Like, it's not all nothing thing, the way things work, but. Yeah.
That added to it.
Or just the fact that he has blinding headaches, like that puts him in a bad mood. He becomes worse of a person. But okay, so then Qyburn's given gold now too. He can get some better clothes because he's dressing shabby right now. So he moves up there. And then we just have the whole Kevin conversation. And I found it interesting. Kevin mentioned like everyone needs someone they can trust. Tywin had me and he had your mother. So, which kind of relates to like Tywin relied on his wife and maybe worked together on stuff, right? Like in terms of.
Yeah. And they say that he changed after she died, that he became more hard.
Right. Right. And he probably, I mean, some of his best years of his ruling as Hand was when he was married. Right. So Kevin sums it up.
Kevin
pretty
knows.
Well. He knows. He knows about the whole incest. Then he just also sums it up. He says, "You didn't think." That's right. That's why you got to go back to Castle Rock. Leave it to the people who actually think. And
he puts her down on every turn that she says.
I think this chapter might have been one of the chapters that was often you like a preview chapter. You know, like when at the end of Storm of Swords, it might have been this chapter. I might have seen one of the versions because I always seem to remember like this whole chapter with Kevin just like putting her down and stuff. Like I think this was one of those chapters that came up before the book came out anyway.
Well, there was the Kevin chapter. Well, or am I thinking of the one where he dies? I'm thinking of the one where he dies.
Yeah. But that wasn't a preview chapter, though. Like, that would have been a big spoiler if the chapter out before. This one, I know this chapter that was out before Feast for Crows came out. And I don't know if it was actually the one that was stuck at the end of Storm of Swords or if it was just online or people referred to it. But I do remember seeing it ahead of time. Mm-hmm. And those were fun times. I remember reading Arms of the Kraken, which was like a magazine that had like Ironborn stuff before Feast for Crows came out. And you could read some of the Ironborn like chapters. So
I got it. I started reading the books around just after Feast for Crows came out. So I was not in the fandom at that point.
You jumped in right away. We still had the first long wait there for that.
Yeah, I have the version of the book that says expect the next one in 2 years.
Oh yeah, I have that as well. See you in a couple years. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a lie.
Then he learned never to write that again in print. Well, that's all I have for this chapter. I think we can kind of roll into the Jaime chapter, which
is and it's kind of a branch of this one, anyways.
Right, it kind of overlaps and shows his point of view, and then a little bit later, and then kind of I guess they're having like another wake or something. They're showing up again to the funeral, to the set, but Jaime's
standing
watch.
I was like, okay, so he's doing a vigil for 7 days and nights. Does that mean like the entire court have to show up every day for 7 days, like to pay the respects? Was that the idea, or?
Yeah, they show up multiple times. I don't know if it's every day or like it could be that they show up. That's kind of tiring to show up every day, but they certainly Tywin's body is getting worse and worse over time. That's the fact that he starts grinning and stuff, and Jamie's like, this is like so not him. So Cersei as well, but then he looks like creepy and stuff, right? And he starts to like rot.
Was the 7 days a night, was that like a normal thing, or was that just like Cersei being Cersei and being like, we need to do it extra
special?
No, I
think it's normal, but I don't know if they do that for everyone or just for like for kings or very powerful people. Like, I don't know if they would do that for every person that dies in the... Well, certainly, even the nobles in the city, I don't think they do that. Yeah, I think it's probably reserved. It is an interesting question. I mean, there actually is quite a bit of religious world building here. Like, in this chapter, that I hadn't remembered all this stuff with, like, these different members of the faith and what they're wearing and all this stuff. Like, yeah, there is quite a bit of world building there. And so Jaime thinks about... he remembers Rhaegar, and who was leaving him in charge, like leaving behind the city, saying, oh, when things are done, I'm going to call a council, changes will be made. He meant to do it long ago. It was too late, Rhaegar. He should have done it long ago.
Now that was that hurts to read that part, knowing that things could have been different, but they weren't, and now we have this. But it's like he probably would have had support from the nobles that he could set his father aside,
right? I think
you have to do something about the pyromancers, though. I don't know. How did Aerys feel about his kids? Like, would he have tried to kill his own kids if it came down to it?
I think he might have. I think he started not even trusting his own kids. But I think that, well, it depends. When did Aerys start stockpiling and doing all that stuff, right? Like, I think that was hopefully fairly later that he started doing that. So, yeah, I think if Rhaegar acted earlier, I think he would have been probably successful. The question is, would the whole Southrun ambitions and the rest of the people who worked with Rhaegar, or they still have moved with him? They probably would have been willing to work with him, I think. But
yeah, well, he still would be married Dorne too. So
right. So they go over Pycelle again. Here's where he looks weak without his beard. Let's see.
Now there's the bit with poor Tommen.
Mm-hmm.
Poor child, having a mother like Cersei.
Right, and he's crying because he sees like the rotting corpse of Tywin, and he's like, "Yeah, you got to stop crying." And being really harsh on him, and Jaime's trying to intervene there. There's this Longwaters guy who Jaime talks to, and he's like, says he's descended from royalty. I think apparently he is. Jaime doesn't believe it.
Yeah, could be. I mean, I feel like everyone's got a little Targ in them.
Right. they talked about the dragon seed or whatever. There's so many people that could technically be able to tame a dragon. Yeah.
That would be funny if it comes up later. Right. See this guy trying to tame a dragon.
Yeah, so then Jaime's just kind of, he knows what's happened. He has to go through this whole farce of fake investigation. He already knows what happens. He feels guilty through the whole chapter. Thinks about Tyrion and what happened.
And the Kingsguard's immediately killing possible witnesses.
Right.
Without thinking.
Fault, I think. I think Cersei told him to do that, but... Cersei shows up again. She's still feuding with Jaime in this whole chapter, but they kind of at least agree with what to do with Mace Tyrell, right? To get him to go after Storm's End, which is good. Get him out there in the field.
Yeah. At least she followed Jaime's advice. But she was, you know, still left pissed off because he wouldn't be hand.
Who would you put, like, if you were, like, in Cersei's place, who do you put for hand, you think, at this situation?
Probably one of Kevin's suggestions.
As I thought, either one would work. You probably, Randall Tarly, just for the fact that, like, the war is going on, could be useful. But even, and Matthias Rowan, the point is, he's respected, a useful guy, and intelligent and just generally respectful. Either of them would have been fine. There's nobody else, or even Kevin, if it worked out, right? Like, you would probably pick Kevin because you like Kevin as a character.
Yeah, well, Kevin wouldn't want. Well, assumingly, if I was in Cersei's position, I would.
You've been transplanted into Cersei's brain. You're Cersei now.
I would have a better relationship with my family and not be crazy, but I'm not sure. If I were Cersei, probably not Tarly, just because I don't, as a woman, I don't think he would listen to me.
Right, exactly. I think that, his attitude toward women, right? Yeah. But Matthias Rowan probably it would be at least be better than Tarly. At least, you don't see a lot of him, but I paid attention to him when I was rereading Storm of Swords. Like, he seems like a decent character. Like, he, I don't know. They have stuff where, like, the people are being like lick spittles or like saying stuff, and Mathis Rowan's like, what's going on here? Like, he just seems like a decent character. Like, from what I remember, that's why Kevin mentions him, right? Like, yeah, I think that would be a good pick. All right, I think that's all I have for this one. Looking through here.
Like, what else happened? Cersei is weird going, sneaking off to the vigil. I had a moment where I'm like, wait a minute, didn't this happen at Joffrey's funeral?
Right.
And I was getting confused. I'm like, oh, thank God they didn't do that again.
No, they didn't go that route. Thankfully, she just wanted to talk to him. But
yeah,
Jamie's not a good pick for Hand, though.
And Jamie seeing Margaery being smart and noting that she's probably a decent girl for a queen. Decent pick.
Right. Yeah, it's just the two chapters pair well with each other because of that, a bit of an overlap and just the different views of what's happening. So, but I think that's pretty much.
I'm trying to think if there is any other details in the jail scene, but we already went over the coin and the two guys were dead.
The only thing that comes out of it, and Jamie points it out, is just that even in the jails, it's not efficient. Like, they're paying for all these people and they only have like half the staff there. It's just like there's a lot of inefficiencies.
Yeah. That there's like 20 people they're paying to guard 6 people. Yeah. And that apparently Varys was okay with, never, you know, mentioned any of that. Or no, the reports went to both Littlefinger and Varys. I noticed that.
Right. And
so Littlefinger didn't do anything about that inefficiency. He saw it.
Yeah, he probably... This is like the one area he probably didn't care as much. At least, like, he didn't care if they're like, what is he going to do? Just cut a few people.
Well, I do wonder if he was also purposely putting the crown in more debt.
Right. Or maybe he was taking some of that money to himself. Like, right? Like, Littlefinger might have siphoned money to himself. Varys didn't have one believe it as once because he was Rugen, right? So he didn't mind having like nobody really looking into it. So it could be that this is an example of like this. Multiple scenarios where maybe Littlefinger was grifting, basically, like taking money to himself and then just leaving it how it was. Or even if he was, and he didn't mind them getting into debt, as you said, like just to cause a ticking time bomb.
Yeah. I think that might be it.
I think that is, yeah. Well, that's good. It was good to get back in this reread and chat with you and just get back into the feel of the books and the podcast. It's good to...
Yeah.
I talk about that on the podcasting panel. It's just like, do a podcast every once in a while. Like, you've got it. Otherwise, you just forget how it is, and you'll enjoy it when you get back into it. So hopefully we'll get more of the crew for next time. But other than that, I guess check us out on podcastoficeandfire.com.
And when House of the Dragons does come out, we will be all over that.
Yeah, because we'll have something to target and view and talk about each week, right? So
yeah, I'm planning to try to reread the whatever I can get from, because there's so many versions of that story.
Oh, really? I think I'd rather just guess that'd be interesting to see how the different views are, but like, who knows what they're going to keep and what they're going to drop, right? Like, I'd rather just see what they do, but that is interesting to...
I want to be able to get the name straight. There's too many.
You sound the same. You're not coming to Comic-Con then. If our panel got approved, you'd be good. Yep. Well, maybe we can Skype you in or something. The panel. I wonder how that work.
Call me on phone, FaceTime. Just put me next to the microphone.
Your picture will be on this iPad. Well, we'll have to look to you for trivia, maybe. That could be interesting. Okay. Because we like to throw trivia in there, but. Yeah. Thanks to everyone for joining us. Check us out on podcastoficeandfire.com, on Facebook and Twitter, and our Discord now. We're on Discord. Got forums are back up and not as active, unfortunately. But yeah, good having you, chatting with you, Ashley, and see everyone next time.
We may disappear for months at a time, but we never die.
That's right.
We always come back.
Harder and stronger. Podcast rises again.
All right.
Cheers. good chatting with you. Yep. And it looks like the record's going through. It looks like it's good, hopefully. So.
Yeah, sorry, I need to remember to just be quiet when I try to look something up. And
right, it's easier to cut. I can still cut it. It's no problem. The record is only 45 minutes here, which is good. I don't want to do super long records anymore. So, okay, I'll be in touch, and I'll let you know how Comic-Con goes.
Would you try to record again beforehand or wait till after and then have like a recap?
No, if people are available, let's record again, for sure. So if Colin gets free again, let's get another record in. But I will certainly do a record after, and we'll bring Tara on, and we'll chat about.
Sure.
I think Tara lives nearby, actually. That's what she told me.
She said she's like less than 2 hours away. I asked her. She's like, she can't take any time off work, but she might be able to just drive down for a day or two.
Yeah, she said the weekend. So I'm hoping that at least one or two of the panels that match would be on the weekend, Orville or House of Dragons, so she can just come join us. So I'm sure she'll come to at least something, so we'll have her on, do another episode.
That would be cool.
Complain about baby boggies. Okay, well, cool.
All right.
Have a good night.
Yep, you too. Cheers.
Bye.
Hello, does it still sound okay?
Yeah, that sounds good.
Okay.
I don't know if did you get a chance to read the chapters? And it was pretty short notice.
Yeah, I read both of them
going through clearly.
Yeah, that's still clear.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think what we'll do is just do a quick episode, but you'll be able to talk about Ice and Fire Con and how that went. And then I'll talk about a little bit about Comic-Con, because I'll be going to go that coming up. And then we just have the two chapters, and that's about it. And I guess House of the Dragon is officially...
Yeah, I have been avoiding information on that, so I'm not knowledgeable at all.
Well, I haven't even. Except that I know when it's coming out. Like I know that it's coming out in August, but like I'm not looking into things beforehand. I'm just gonna watch it. But
yeah, that's kind of my approach too.
Well, then we can confirm that basically when we talk about it. But, okay. Let's just see. I don't think Kyle was coming in to see any other emails. Episode, so this will be episode 264. Record, it looks like it's going well here. It's on, okay. Okay, are you good to start?
Oh no, there's no Kyle to do the intro.
No, I mean, I'll do the intro. We don't have to worry about so much. I can do chapter recaps as well. I mean, we can just go into what we thought of the chapter and go through it.
Okay.
I think more of it is just like chatting about what we've been up to, or what, like, you know, SMR Con, what's coming up, that kind of thing. Just getting the episode out, and then we'll get more out hopefully in the future.
Okay.
Okay. So I'll get us started.
Sure.
Okay. And, okay, here we go. Recorder is on.